Birkenstock. Berg.
Yes.
Christensen.
Yes, thank you.
Denard.
Present.
Elgindy. Goodman.
Present.
Moffitt. Morrow.
I'm here.
Penna.
Here.
Seaman.
Here.
Absent is Beanstalk, Elgindy, and Moffitt.
Thank you, Sherry. Declaration of the conflict of interest. Any board member needs to declare anything. Great. Then we'll move on to agenda item 3. First off, you know, I want to give a little recap of the committee. You know, I think the board really owes a great deal of gratitude to the committee members that were involved. This was a long, arduous, kind of painstaking process that the committee members, our rule writer, Jessica, board staff, all really put a lot of time into, and we're grateful for him for that. I want to thank the legislators as well. I know Senator Champ in particular was, you know, really a person of interest throughout this process. And I think, you know, the more public interest that goes into safety in the dental office is always going to be a good thing. The Ryan, jump in and correct me with any of my recap if I misspeak, but the committee was formed in 2019. And in 2020 with COVID, the committee pretty much only met 3 times. I took over as chair of the committee sometime in there. So I feel, you know, pretty well versed in the ongoings of this committee. And you know, like I said, it was a tough process. During the time, there was a bill that was passed, 1602, and part of the bill required the committee to make a recommendation to the board by the end of August, which the committee did. With that said, there were some key items that in my opinion weren't really flushed out to the extent that I think the committee would have liked to have flushed out, which is why in our packet you see emails from several former committee members talking about potential edits they'd like to see. So although that may appear as changes in the 11th hour, I think the only reason the 11th hour came on was because of the requirements of this bill. And had the committee had a little more time, I think they would have flushed it out. With that said, in the end of the day, it's a board decision. So that's why we're here today. My plan as far as running the meeting today and some of the future steps we're going to have to take is to try to limit the discussion to certainly the board staff, and then former committee members and some interested parties that wrote in. The rest of the public will have ample opportunity to speak to the rules. It may not happen today, but there's going to be, assuming nothing is adopted today, which I don't think that's going to happen, you know, to speak frankly. I think if edits are made, we're going to request Jessica make those edits, bring it back to the board in October for a meeting. And then if rules are adopted at that point, they'll be posted to the BODEX website where all interested parties, all members of the public can write in. And then following that, the board is going to have a formal oral proceeding at which all those comments, all public interests can be discussed, reviewed, and then a final recommendation can be made by the board to go to GIRC. So that's kind of my tentative plan. But Ryan, did I misstate anything? I mean, you and I have had some calls back and forth. I feel like I didn't get to flush this out with you, but those are my thoughts at this point.
Yeah, I think you did everything spot on. You did a great job of explaining quickly what's transpired and where we are now and what the next steps are for the board. So you did a great job. I appreciate you explaining it so I don't have to.
Well, I appreciate it. As you may have picked up on some of the emails that are in our packet, there's four different permits the board currently issues, 1301, 2, 3, and 4. The primary comments still hover around 1304, some with 1301, and then some, I think, clarification on a pediatric endorsement, which is a new continuing educational requirement the committee's recommending permit holders obtain if they're going to treat patients of a certain age. So I think rather than me try to give a background on all that, let's dive in. I'm going to call on some former committee members, and we'll start with those that wrote in. And actually, if Senator Shamp is on the line and wishes to speak, you know, you've been very involved, I think, in the process this whole time. I'll give you an opportunity to speak first, and then I'll move to former committee members, and then the board can have discussion. So, Senator, if you're on and you'd like to speak, now would be a good opportunity.
Hi, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity. I appreciate your time, and I appreciate all the hard work. My only comment, I've submitted a few emails, and so I won't belabor the point, but the legislative intent is about patient safety, and it is about access to care. And so I hope that is taken into consideration when we do discuss legislative intent, that is exactly the intent of SB 1602. And if there's any kind of clarification other than what I've submitted in the emails, I will be on here. And please feel free to ask for my clarification. So, again, thank you very much for your time, members of the board. Director Edmondson, I appreciate all that you are doing and all of the stakeholders that are working to make dental anesthesia safer for all Arizonans. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator. So I'm going to just go down the list of some of the former committee members and interested parties that wrote in. Dr. Arnell, are you on?
Yes, yes, I'm here.
So, you know, your email I know was submitted late. I don't know if all the board members had an opportunity to go through that or not, but why don't you just briefly give some background and then kind of explain your position in your email, please.
And Dr. Hero, if I can, before we start with these committee members, I just want to reiterate the committee member. There are committee members present, or we should probably call them former committee members. You are now speaking as a member of the public on your own behalf and not on the behalf of the committee.
Thank you, Ryan. Go ahead, Doctor.
Okay, Thank you, Dr. Hero. As you said, my email was circulated late. I spent the majority of my time speaking with other dentist anesthesiologists in the state, and speaking with other interested people. And so my opinion came in a little bit late. So rather than just speak off the cuff, maybe I'll just read a few of the paragraphs from this email. I don't think I'll be allowed enough time to read the whole thing, so I'll just hit the highlights. So this is what I said. Dear friends and colleagues, after working with you for so many months on the Arizona Bodex Anesthesia Committee, I believe the committee has accomplished its work in the best interest of our patients and the professional environment we treat them in. I do not believe we should allow individual legislators or outside professions to manipulate dentistry for their own interests. Dentistry should be allowed to self-govern and self-regulate. I formally request that the board vote to accept the document as written by the Anesthesia Committee. And this committee, as a side note, has given several years of their professional time to help the board I formally request that the board accept the work that we offer to our profession and to the board. I realize that there's other opinions on the subject, and so rather than ignore them, I do want to address them. So if the board chooses not to accept the document as it was written by the committee, and they require all dentists who hire or work with 1301 permitted dentist anesthesiologists such as myself to also individually obtain 1304 or other permits, then I formally request that the general direction of the changes be as follows. One, that dentist anesthesiologists who have completed a COTA accredited residency in dental anesthesiology receive a 1301 permit by registration with the board that is specific to dentist anesthesiologists based on their professional credentials to provide both fixed and mobile anesthesia within Arizona, and that dentist anesthesiologists will no longer be required to have a site visit or oral examination with Bodex examiners in order to obtain or renew their 1301 permit. And two, that the 1301 permit should be reduced to two things. First, a registration with the board to hire or work with a qualified anesthesia provider. And two, a signed affidavit that their chosen qualified anesthesia provider meets analogous standards required of 1301 permit holders, and that a site visit with a board examiner will not be required to obtain a 1304 permit. I believe that these changes will hold all providers of general anesthesia to the same standards, and that they represent a tremendous professional courtesy to allow providers outside of dentistry to work easily inside dentistry. There are many details to consider to make these changes function in the context of the whole document, and there will be unintended consequences to the practices of dentist anesthesiologists. And I ask the board to recognize that these changes will primarily negatively impact dentist anesthesiologists, those they work with, and the patients they treat. So in light of that, if the board votes to reject our professional recommendation to accept the anesthesia committee document and moves to amend it, I ask the board to allow representatives of the Arizona Society of Dentist Anesthesiologists to participate in writing the new language. And then I signed it, friends and colleagues, thank you for your consideration. So really, I would like to reiterate that our recommendation is that the board accept the hard work that this committee has done and accept the document as written and as voted upon by the committee. But if that is not to be the case, then I ask the board to take those two broad considerations that I mentioned regarding 1301 permit for dentist anesthesiologist to be done by credential, and regarding the 1304 permit to be a registration and an affidavit without an unnecessary additional site visit. Thank you very much. And if anybody has any questions for me, I'm happy to answer.
Thank you, Doctor. I you know, there's two ways to proceed. Mm-hmm. One would be to allow board members to ask speakers questions when they're finished. I have a sense it's going to turn into too much of a discussion if we do that. So I think what we should do is hear all the speakers, let the board discuss, and then if we have questions for anybody that's on, we can revisit that. So I'm going to move on. Ali Bagai, are you on with us?
Yes, I'm here. I apologize, for some reason my camera's not working, so you don't get to see my ugly mug during this call.
Well, yeah, we appreciate you being here, Ali. Do you want to speak to anything?
Sure. I don't know what that I sent was shared. Did my thoughts on changing the approved recommendations get shared with the board members?
Yeah, I believe it was in our packet, but Ryan, can you confirm that?
Prince Ali, these documents were presented. It was in your supplemental packet that went out after the original packet went, so you got it in your supplemental packet. Sorry, Ali, I couldn't resist.
Hey, no problem. There should have been some bugles or something. So what I sent over was the concerns that I have that I brought up in our committee. And what I addressed in the email that I sent regards patient safety. For a current rules, a CRNA or physician anesthesiologist that goes into a dental office, that dentist obtains a 1304 permit, or they could have obtained one of the other permits and that would work as well. But it shows that the dentist who owns the clinic or works in the clinic has done a degree of additional training through ACLS, as well as an understanding and knowledge of what the requirements are to safely administer anesthesia in a dental office. What our recommendations lacked was that when they bring in any qualified anesthesia provider, that they're not needing that training. So to what Dr. Arnell spoke of, I agree with many of his points regarding that every office obtain at least a 1304 permit to bring in a qualified anesthesia provider, whether that's a CRNA, a physician anesthesiologist, or a dentist anesthesiologist, or perhaps a mobile 1302 permit holder. I think that is the best direction to go for patient safety, to make sure that both the anesthesia provider coming in is well-trained, as well as the dentist having some basic understanding of how to manage a bad situation that could arise in the process of sedation or anesthesia in a dental office. Also, to agreeing with what Dr. Arnell said, is regarding the requirement of an on-site evaluation for a dentist anesthesiologist. A dentist anesthesiologist has completed a residency in anesthesia, as well as become board certified in anesthesia. So I don't feel it's necessary for them to have the on-site evaluation as it might be for another dentist that did not have as significant training as a dentist anesthesiologist. Regarding the on-site evaluation for 1304, I also agree with Dr. Arnall. If the dentist shows that they've done the requirements for 1304, needing to have an on-site evaluation to examine the site, doesn't necessarily make sense. And I can tell you why, in my opinion, it doesn't make sense, is that for the on-site evaluations for a 1304 permit, the dentist can bring in any anesthesia provider they want. It could be, Dr. Arnall that goes in there, or Dr. Caputo. And that person brings in all the equipment and supplies and medications that are necessary to safely administer anesthesia. But there's no requirement that the dentist continues to use that anesthesia provider when they provide services. So given that, the on-site evaluation isn't as important for the dentist who is doing the procedure as it is that they have, advanced cardiac life support, that they're signing an affidavit that they understand everything that is required to safely administer anesthesia in a dental office as far as equipment, supplies, and medications. I tweaked some language that it sounds like is in your packet. I did try to adjust the language in a way that was least impactful to the approved language from the last committee meeting of the Anesthesia Sedation Committee. In that language, I added to change in 1304 to be from being a non-dentist anesthesia provider to being a qualified anesthesia provider. I added some language in the definitions to define that a qualified anesthesia provider is a dentist anesthesiologist, or I believe it says a dentist who has a mobile permit issued by the dental board, also includes a CRNA and a MD anesthesiologist or DO anesthesiologist. I also added language in there to somewhat address what Dr. Arnall said, which would be to waive an on-site evaluation for a dentist anesthesiologist, being a dentist who has completed a residency, 3-year residency in dental anesthesia and is board certified in anesthesia. I did not add any language about what Dr. Arnell brought up today regarding the lack of a requirement for an on-site evaluation for 1304. I did put language to have a temporary permit available for 1304. But anyways, that's basically my position there, is that we do need to improve patient safety, and that's the dental board's responsibility to protect the public. And I think that making sure that every dentist who brings in a qualified anesthesia provider has some basic training and understanding of anesthesia and sedation in dental office to ensure public safety. So thanks for your time, and I'm available for any questions. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ali. Dr. Blazek.
Dr. Hero, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can. Great. Thanks for being here.
Great. Dr. Hero and members of the board, I appreciate your time and opportunity to talk. And everyone who's jumped on here has been patting each other on the back and saying how great a job we did. And I would echo those sentiments. And I certainly would thank the board for all the hard work you do on everything besides this topic or this issue. And I apologize for being in my vehicle on this video call. I feel pretty special to follow the speakers that have gone ahead of me, because ironically enough, it seems we're all on the same page here, although it took us quite a long time to get here. And I would echo the sentiments of you, Dr. Hero, that I just think the problem was the 1602 bill really put us under some pressure to try to submit something to the board in late August that we felt we had too much on the table with 1304 to make changes at the 11th hour. And so we just submitted the packet as it was. But yet, Dr. Arnall, Ali, they're both from the committee, and they're expressing sentiments that I would have. And I certainly was able to submit my documents in time. And I think everyone has the documents where I define not an NDAP, which is a non-dental anesthesia provider, but we changed the language. And this was a lot of work that we did. I worked with Ali on it for a qualified anesthesia provider. So much like Dr. Arnall and Ali have reiterated, it's someone with a postgraduate training program in anesthesia. So it's the dental anesthesiologists, it's the MDAs, it's the maxillofacial surgeons, it's the CRNAs. And if we change that definition to a qualified anesthesia provider and then subsequently changed all the language in the current statutes to reflect that, we are going to accomplish exactly what Dr. Arnall has indicated and what Ali has indicated. So I'm not going to keep talking or beating a dead horse. We're all on the same page here. We just need to get the document done. I think Jessica is going to be more than able to do that with the information we provided the board. And I'll just stay on the line to answer specific questions. The one thing I would add, I think why we improve safety with this mechanism, and Ali and Dr. Arnall said it, so I'm going to just reiterate it, is for the general dentist who has real, no formal training in anesthesia in dental school, if they want to bring an anesthesia provider in who are all extremely qualified, we feel it necessary for the dentist to have some basic knowledge of emergency situations, which they're going to gain through ACLS. They're going to gain airway management through ACLS and other airway courses. But also, this 1304 permit provides the board an opportunity to understand where anesthesia is being provided in the state of Arizona. And that's really critical. The era of anesthesia in the dental office, and nobody knows about it but the provider, I think that's going to lend itself to probably more anesthesia issues. So I'll stop there, but I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Blazek. Dr. Brady.
Hi, can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah. Yes, we can.
Sorry, I'm having to talk on my cell phone in a parking lot because of certain time constraints, so I apologize for that. And I just want to say thank you for inviting me in here to speak. I do feel that the committee worked very, very hard on this document, extremely hard. The 1304 permit in itself, when we first did the revisions, we worked really hard with Jessica on that, and there wasn't many different talking points on changing it. However, there were significant changes on the original document to the 1304 document, and that had to do with simplifying kind of the process to make it set the standard of a 1301 permit. That way, utilize it as a pointer, so they were all on the same standard. And my concern is that the 1304 permit is really an instrument to allow dentists to bring in people. And I understand where some of these oversights may happen. So now that we had a dentist and an anesthesia provider that may also be a dentist, where that dentist may have to have some educational qualifications or background. But I would contend that those improvements and those things that are necessary to be done, where you would see certain type of dichotomies, be placed into the 1301 mobile permit for many reasons. The one thing you do not want in a dental rules and regulations is two different standards for dentists providing general anesthesia. There's a lot of unintended consequences with that, where in one setting you have to have two permitted providers and another setting you only have to have one permitted provider. I think that's going to be counterintuitive and confusing for many reasons. There's a lot of special needs that I work with when I'm working with a pediatric dentist, and sometimes they forego their 1302 permit, but that is fine. I also bring in staff that also have ACLS and PALS training on my own, just because I feel that that's what is necessary for me. So I don't necessarily disagree with what people are saying. There are ways in that mobile permit that you can strengthen that team dynamic. But you know, with special needs population, there's a very limited amount of people that will work with the special needs populations for several reasons. It's just, there's a high barrier to take on for that population. And many times when I'm working with them, I'll work at a pediatric office where the pediatric dentist will do that, do the work that is needed. And then the endodontist may come in and do the work that is needed. And maybe even a hygienist will come in and do the work that is needed. And as they're all there working, they're not all in the same room at the same time. They're going to see other patients. I'm in the room with them the entire time. And I would contend to you that I would, if I was working with another non-dentist permanent provider, then I would bring on someone with the same qualifications and standards that could be easily inserted into the 1301 mobile permit to have that type of oversight, such as bringing in a paramedic or an EMT, and those that are actually trained in the wheelhouse of resuscitation of emergency crisis. That's how a prepared provider is really going to strengthen its team, is through that. I think bringing a dichotomy to two different standards to our rules and regulation is going to be very problematic. I know that AMIS just actually signed on. That's a national recognition for the Society for Oral Surgeons, and also with the American Dental Society of Anesthesiologists, has model legislation that they both have signed on to that actually speaks of this and only having a one permit type of environment. So I would definitely encourage my colleagues in OMS to kind of reach out for those resources that are there. I do also believe that, you know, we have a very strong committee that did a lot of work for 4 years. I think the recommendations were very, very good. Even in 1304, we've made this to try to reduce barriers of entry so that we can have abilities for access and reach of care. And we also worked on things that would allow that to happen, where we know that they're set to the same standards as anyone with a 1301 permit, because a 1301 permit, a general anesthesia provider, any qualified general anesthesia provider, has to have the tools that is necessary to manage such an event in an office. So I thank you guys for your time. Yes, we can always improve. We can always make things a little bit better, but I urge not to create a double standard in hindsight of trying to put everything in the same bucket. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Brady. Dr. Caputo.
Thank you, Dr. Hero. I am flipping around on screens here, so I am going to go offline from the Zoom screen here and just go into some of my notes. And I'll preface my comments by just letting the committee know I'm the guy that shows up. I actually was not on the committee, and so I know you received a transmittal from me identifying some comments that I had about the entire document, and maybe some of you thought, why is he bringing this stuff up now? And it's particularly for that reason. I participated in many of the committee meetings, but I was not on the committee itself. And so when I had an opportunity to actually look at the document that was sent out to all of us on August 17th, that was the basis of the comments that I forwarded to the board, and that I hope you got, and I hope you're able to look through. I don't want to necessarily get into the details of each of my comments. As you know, there was 13 of them, and I think some of them are editorial. I do think it's important for the committee to know that the document that was submitted to the board dated August 16th was not actually the document that was approved by the Anesthesia and Sedation Committee. Not exactly sure what happened. I realized things were kind of moving pretty quickly towards the end, and it just might have been an oversight. But there were some things missing, and I just think the board needs to make sure those things get back in there. And I don't think it would be good to approve this document without making sure that happens. That's particularly the case with comment number one and comment number 13, as they're both sort of connected and related. Generally, and I'm also here to tell you, I'm not going to talk to you about 1304. I'm actually going to talk to you about some other areas, specifically 1301 and 1303. And within those two permit levels, I would like the board to consider how we're actually handling this pediatric endorsement. I understand it, and while I don't necessarily fully agree with it, I do understand the intent. And we all want safety. I'm not a big believer in creating rules or statutes to make safety better. I think that happens on an individual level, but I do appreciate that there needs to be some type of framework in place, and certainly that's where statutes and rules come into play. Having said that, I think one of the challenges with the pediatric endorsement is just the way that it was written, with the unintended consequences of eliminating the need for a permit holder at the 1301 or 1303 level to potentially not have any adult experience and get all of their clinical experience through treating children and still get to renew their permit. And the problem there, as we all know, is many of the cases that we see that involve adverse occurrences with sedation and anesthesia occur with adults, and very minimally with children. So I don't know that we should not appreciate the significance of ensuring continued training and clinical competency in the treatment of adults as well as children. I also think the age isn't accurate. It doesn't really comport with PALS guidelines. Just as a broad rule, PALS usually follows age guidelines related to puberty. And if you look it up in any type of references, we see girls going through puberty anywhere from 8 to 11 or 12, and boys going through puberty anywhere from 9 to 12 or 13. As I thought about this and looked at what other boards do, the age that is usually used as a cutoff between children and adults is 13. So I would ask the board to consider changing the 8-year comment or requirement to 13 and younger, based on that mere condition that I mentioned. Additionally, I'd like the board to consider the idea of CE requirements for this pediatric endorsement to actually be included with the 30 hours that a permit holder would have to complete over the 5-year period versus being in addition to. The way the rules are written, that in addition to is every 2 years for the pediatric endorsement, which would translate to 67.5 hours that a permit holder who wanted to obtain the 1303, the pediatric endorsement would have to complete at the 1301 or 1303 levels. I think the idea was just to ensure that there was some training in pediatrics, which I certainly support. I think it's reasonable to say that 15 of the hours that are being requested for a pediatric endorsement be for the 5-year period versus a 2-year period. So that's 15 hours versus the 37.5, I think, is the calculation. And that actually be included with the overall hours. So of the 30 hours, 15 need to be in pediatrics as identified. I don't think it's a hard change to make within the rules and something that's very manageable. And I think it accomplishes the same opportunity that we're trying to enforce with the rules as they're presented to you. Another general comment is just getting a renewal. As I mentioned in comment 12 regarding the 1303 permit, and again, I just don't know that this was something that was missed, but the way the rules read, and it's on page 22 of the document that you all have, and what you'll see is in looking at page 22 at the bottom in section D, when you go from number 2 to number 3, after number 2, it says or. So by virtue of saying or, the folks who have a residency training in pediatrics then don't have to go through the continuing education training. And I don't think that that was what was intended when this language was created. And so I just think you need to revisit that and ensure that anybody that has a 1303 permit with a pediatric endorsement is going through the same clinical competency training with regards to patients, as well as the additional CE requirements. And I just will close. I think I had, oh, and my last comment really was in regards to the language about minimal sedation. We actually, at the last committee meeting of the Anesthesia and Sedation Committee, had discussed language for minimal sedation, and for whatever reason, that was left out of this document. So again, I just think that that needs to be put back in there. So it's a pretty straightforward read. I appreciate the opportunity to present this to you, and I do strongly ask you to consider those changes, because I think the document is incomplete if some of those necessary things aren't done, and then also ask you to consider some parity with respect to CE requirements, as well as ensuring that all permit level holders are held to the same standard of renewal and not be separated out by virtue of training. Thank you.
Dr. Hero, this is Ryan Portstaff. Just a quick comment, if I can.
Yeah, please.
So Dr. Caputo brought up the different drafts that have come before the committee and the board. There was a snafu with the last anesthesia and sedation committee packet not having the most current document. When Jessica, the board's rules writer, was sharing her screen, she was working off the most current document, but we disseminated the wrong one. And I'm not sure, I think we've got the wrong one, and that's why you got the wrong one. And so anything before 8:17, just in that short window between the ANS meeting and the board meeting, there was an inaccurate document that was submitted. But the one that was included in the board's packet on 8, for your board meeting on 8:17 and delivered on, on 8:18 and delivered on 8:17 is the most current document. And so you have the most correct document in your packet. Dr. Caputo is referencing the fact that there was an inaccurate copy. So I think the one you have in front of you today is the most current and is not missing the things. There are things, like you pointed out on page 22, that still exist, but that's something that you guys as a board would have to consider, the or and some of the other comments that Dr. Caputo made.
Thank you, Ryan. Dr. Lout, I see you're on. Did you want to make any comments?
Yeah, I don't really have any comments. I think the document that we put together as far as pediatrics and the requirements and things like that, I think it's pretty solid. I don't recommend any changes.
Thank you, Doctor. Dr. German, I see you on. Did you want to make any comments?
Yeah, I'll make just a couple of comments. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. And As you can see, the committee was made up of a diverse group of experts and professionals in the area of anesthesia. And as you can imagine, we all had our own interests and our own opinions, but I want to just kind of reiterate what the former committee members have said, in that this document represents what we feel is the best in terms of access to care and safety of our patients, which were the two main foci of our efforts. Just to, as a pediatric anesthesiologist, I just need to comment to Dr. Caputo's comments about age. The age in the document was actually decided upon based on information from AMOS and also the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Society of Anesthesiology. The physiology of a 5, 4, 3, even 6-year-old is much different than a 13-year-old child. And so those were the reasons we had chosen that age. And, you know, data is very clear on the importance of competency and expertise, which comes with experience. And so this concept of clinical currency is extremely important. And we felt that it was that important to put in, especially for pediatric patients. So that's all I wanted to comment.
Thank you, Doctor. Just one note for the record, at 5:11, Dr. Beanstock joined us.
Hi, everybody. Sorry I'm late. Thanks so much.
Thanks for being here.
Patients.
Dr. Cobb.
Thank you, committee members and the board for having this special committee. And I appreciate all the work that the committee's done on this big subject. And you guys have spent many years doing this and a lot of hours. And I know that that's by the whole dental community. And I speak to you on a couple of different hats today. One is the executive director of the Dental Association, and I have been listening to some of the comments, and I actually am in agreement with a lot of what has been said prior to me. I feel like the universal 1304, if it is in place, the 1301 license should be not permitted, as I've said before, and I've not been on this committee or on the board, but I have expressed my views that I feel like we're over-permitting right now, and I feel like that getting rid of the 1301 permit and having them registered and not necessarily having a site visit, because most of the 1304 permits, as I understand, are approved, and most of it is by attestation. So I feel like that you guys are heading in the right direction with that. What I do disagree with is the temporary permits that I think Ollie the guy had mentioned that he would like to see that. If you're doing your regular permits within 26 days, and that's the average right now, there really is no reason for a temporary permit, and it just, I think, adds an extra burden onto the board. And then I'm going to put on my second hat here, and I'm going to say, as a former legislator, although I respectfully appreciate Senator Shamp's, her views on her original introduction of 1602. That wasn't what was passed with the legislature, and it wasn't what was signed by the governor. And so although the intent was there, that wasn't what was passed, and obviously couldn't pass through either the House or the Senate. So I feel like we needed to really go with the intent of what her final bill came out with. And I think you did do that. And I'm hoping that when you come up with some of the recommendations or modifications that you have today, I think it does involve the intent, especially if you do anybody that's given anesthesia with a 1304 permit, you have the two members, the person giving anesthesia and the person that's permitting the office, that both have an ACLS. So you've got a double, and that's what I think she was really intent on, is safety. And that, and I'm not going to speak for her, but or her bill, but I think the original one was looking for safety all the way through. I think I heard her speak in committees about that, and I think you're going down the right path if that's the path you're going down. And again, I appreciate all the work that the committee's had to do over the last 4 years. I know you've come through some some hardships trying to get this done in a timely manner. So thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Cobb. So for our board members, I'm going to try to recap, I think, what's being recommended, because for some of you, this is probably the first time you're hearing it. And then I'll give my personal opinion on what's been discussed. Then I'm going to turn to Dr. Beanstock and Dr. Christensen as board members, but also former anesthesia and sedation committee members. I think they're equally well-versed in this. And then we'll open it up to the board for discussion. So regarding the 1301 permit, the edit to the existing document would be that there's essentially two separate 1301 permits. There's a 1301 OMFS for the oral surgeons that would look identical to what the current recommended rule modifications read. The other 1301 permit would be for DAs, dental anesthesiologists, and that would eliminate the on-site evaluation and the oral examination. With regards to that discussion, I'm in full support of that. It's something I brought up at the beginning of the committee meeting, and I don't think we are increasing safety by requiring these anesthesiologists to go through the evaluation. I think it's just costing board resources we don't have and delaying new residents or new graduate from residency programs an opportunity to go out and practice. So from an access to care standpoint, I think it's going to help. Dr. Beanstock, go ahead.
Just for the record, since we're talking about safety, has any dental anesthesiologist ever failed the 1301 permit when they tried to get it?
Great point. So our database can't really track that, but in my discussion with staff this past week, nobody remembers in the near future at all any 1301 permit failures on the evaluation or examination. Ryan, can you confirm that, though? That was a conversation we had earlier in the week.
Of dental anesthesiologists.
Correct.
Yeah, so we had, by recollection, because you're correct. Sorry, I think I froze. We, by recollection, because our database does not collect that information, that gave us an opportunity to see if we can do better with the database when we get a new vendor. No staff recalls a 1301 provider failing either the initial or the renewal. There were a few 1302 providers or trying to be done with the 1302 provider that did fail.
Thank you. With regards to the next discussion point, 1304 permits, the idea, so right now, the way the existing rules read and the recommendation from the committee would be only dentists working with non-dental anesthesia providers would have to have a 1304 permit. What I myself believe, what I heard Dr. Blazik and Dr. Arnell speak to as well, and Ali, I feel like I'm forgetting somebody, but that any dentist working on a sedated patient has to have a permit. So if you have a 1302 permit, you don't need a 1304. If you have a 1303 permit, you don't need a 1304. If you have no permit and you want to work with a CRNA, an MD anesthesiologist, or a dental anesthesiologist, the new recommendation would be that you have to have a 1304 permit. Again, this is something I'm in favor of, but I'm in favor of it with some stipulations, and I'm right in line with what Dr. Arnell discussed. I think we eliminate the on-site evaluation for the 1304 permit holder because, frankly, it just doesn't make any sense. I don't know what the board is evaluating a 1304 permit holder for if they're not the ones providing the anesthesia. It should look more as a signed affidavit or an attestation that they are meeting the requirements and the rules, but we are not requiring the on-site evaluation. Currently, board staff has indicated that the turnaround time on these permits is less than 30 days, which in and of itself is very quick. The elimination of the evaluation, I think, expedites that all the more, which should address any concerns to access to care. The other point, and this was not discussed yet, but I'm going to pose it for discussion. The way the 1304 reads is that the permitted dentist would have to have ACLS, PALS, or an advanced airway course. And I like that, but I would almost want to give the permit holder a little more latitude in that they would attest that two team members have those qualifications, meaning the 1301 permit holder or the non-dental anesthesia provider. Certainly they would have to meet ACLS or PALS. If they want to bring in an assistant or a nurse or a resident that meets those qualifications, I think that should suffice for the dual ACLS or dual PALS requirement. If the permit holder elects to also get certified, great. Or if there's not going to be a second team member with those certifications, then the onus would fall on the permit holder. But I like that latitude, something we can discuss. That's my own personal thought. One issue that was not talked about, and I don't necessarily want to get too much in the weeds on this, but if there's a way to coincide the license renewal dates with the permitted renewal dates, I think it's going to make things easier on our licensees. But that's something we can talk through. So given the two key points we're talking about, 1301 and 1304, I'm going to look to Dr. Beanstock first and then Dr. Christensen to give some input, and then we'll discuss amongst the board after that.
So I completely agree with what, Dr. Hero, what you've proposed for the first point. The second point, I just want to clarify what you were saying, that at all times, two people will have a CPR, ACLS, or PALS certification they don't have to be the one treating the patient, but at least there's two people at all times in the room with the patient who's certified. Is that correct?
So yeah, right now, the 1304 permit requires one of three certifications, ACLS, PALS, or an advanced airway course. I personally like the idea of the advanced airway course because there's an argument that the safety increases if the second provider has understanding of airway management, potentially more so than what you're even going to get in ACLS. So part of me hates to pigeonhole it to just ACLS if there's courses there that for this realm are equivalent or better. So I think that required part clarification. The other clarification or my recommendation would be that it's not stipulated to just the permit holder, but that there's two members. So if the general dentist elects, look, I'm not comfortable getting ACLS certified, but I'll hire in a nurse who's ACLS certified, a recovery room nurse. Or the dental anesthesiologist says, look, I'm going to bring in a DA resident that meets these qualifications. Or the 1304 permit holder says, I'm going to employ a paramedic. Why prevent them from doing it at that point? As long as there's two team members that meet those requirements, I think that should suffice. Senator Shamp, I don't want to put you on the spot. I think this was an important point for you. I'd like to get your input on that proposal, though, that I'm making right now. Then, Dr. Murray, you got your hand up. I'll circle to you.
I'm just getting clarification, right? So are we insinuating that if a general dentist who doesn't have a permit or has the 1304 right now, if they can bring in a nurse anesthetist is that what the deal is? Am I getting the numbers right? 1304, right?
So currently 1304 is for the non-sedation permanent dentist that wants to work with a non-dental anesthesia provider.
Yeah. I'm just making sure I got the numbers right. So let's say you've got a non-certified dentist who has a 1304 who's bringing in a nurse anesthetist. Are we insinuating that the patient that is under GA in that office is less safe with a nurse anesthetist than we would be a dental anesthesiologist?
Not in any way.
Okay. Now, are we requiring more of that general dentist by bringing in a nurse anesthetist rather than a general versus a dental anesthesiologist?
No. In fact, the changes we're recommending would I'll let you speak to this as a CRNA, but to me, I think it in your words would level the playing field more.
Okay, and that's what I want right now is that a patient, regardless of the acronyms behind their name, should have the equal amount of protection and safety at any point. That's my point, is that if we're allowing one, we have to allow the others, all having equal level playing fields. But now in the future, we're requiring that dentist to bring in either someone who has ACLS or becomes ACLS certified themselves in order to continue to do that going forward. Is that what we're saying?
That's currently how it is. So the requirement is not becoming more stringent for non-dental anesthesia providers. It's, to Dr. Arnell's point, it's potentially a little more stringent on the dental anesthesiologists.
Okay.
My hope is with alleviating the need for them to go through on-site evaluations and oral examinations, there's a balance for that increases public safety and access to care.
And I guess last point of clarification then is, do I have to go then get my ACLS in order to continue to bring in my nurse anesthetist or DA?
Well, currently, if you're working with a nurse anesthetist as a 1304 permit holder, you should have ACLS, PALS, or an advanced airway course.
Sure.
So that wouldn't change.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Yep.
But, that, Dr. Hero, with these changes, you said that you could have somebody, it wouldn't have to be Dr. Morrow who has that. It could be anybody else that's
correct.
In the room with the patient who has
correct.
That for clarification. Correct.
Dr. Seaman, before I go to you, I'm going to go to Ali just because I think he can speak right on point to what we're talking about.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Hero, and thank you, Dr. Morrow, for your question. I just wanted to throw my hand up and chime in just because I was asked my perspective. I do believe that the recommendations, the way Dr. Hero outlined them, to change the 1304 permit to a qualified anesthesia provider would do what I believe you're asking for, Dr. Morrow, which is to make it that it's an equal standard that every dentist that brings in any qualified anesthesia provider has that additional training and has that additional understanding of anesthesia and dental office through having a permit from the dental board.
Thank you, Ali. Dr. Seaman.
Just for clarification for me, if this dentist, you're saying it's a dentist that has a 1304 permit, but he's bringing in non-dentist people to help with the case. Is that what I'm understanding? So he can bring all non-dentist people to help him. So if there's an adverse occurrence, is the dentist clear with the board if he says, I brought in all these other people? And we say, yes, you did. You brought in all these other people. The board has no jurisdiction on these other people. But you're clear.
Yeah, so I think that's a hard question to answer, Dr. Seaman, or I guess I might need clarification. If, you know, to me, it's always a team approach. So if it's truly an anesthesia-related issue and only an anesthesia-related issue in the instance of an adverse occurrence, then it's probably going to be the anesthesia provider who is under scrutiny under this board or their prospective board. But as we've seen oftentimes, it's not strictly an anesthesia issue that results in the adverse occurrence. It can be a surgical approach that complicated the anesthesia that led to the adverse occurrence, at which point the permit holder being the dentist isn't necessarily just cleared from the board. So I don't know if I'm understanding your question, so I don't know if I'm answering it correctly, but if from the standpoint of are they compliant with the rules, if there's two team members in the room who meet these qualifications, then yes, they are compliant with that.
And not accountable for any adverse occurrence.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's hard for me to say not accountable. I mean, you know, like we had a case where the surgical team, you know, planned like an 8-hour surgery and there was adverse occurrences related to the length of time. Well, I think that the anesthesia provider certainly holds responsibility, but I think the surgical team also holds responsibility in that instance. So I hesitate to just say, yeah, they're clear. But if the adverse occurrence is only related to anesthesia, then it's going to fall to the responsibility of the anesthesiologist. Just to point to some people that are raising their hands, unless I call you, I'm not going to take hand raises right now. I'm concerned that things are going to be delayed too much. So, there'll be ample time, like I said at the beginning of the meeting, for public comments, both on the website and at the formal oral hearing. Right now is not the time for that. So back to you, Dr. Seaman. If I'm not answering your question, maybe Dr. Beanstalk can, because I'm doing my best.
Well, we wanted to hear from Dr. Christensen, so I'm going to pass it to Dr. Christensen.
And Dr. Hero, this is AAG Seamus Monahan. Maybe I can help out. To answer your question, Dr. Seaman, you know, often the people who come, the respondents who come before us are licensed, certified, right? They've met all the qualifications, but it's a very fact-based decision on whether they, you know, perform the services to standard. So, you know, again, your job won't change. You know, it will just be that another extension of that certification or licensure, where you're not looking at them doing it without the license. They have the license. So you're then determining whether they're acting, you know, above the standard of care within the parameters of that permit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Does that help, Dr. Seaman?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Okay.
Dr. Christensen, I'm going to put you on the spot now. Comments on what we're talking about related to 1301 and 1304.
Thank you, Dr. Hero. Thank you, all committee members that worked on this, and especially those our non-dental providers, Ali and Dr. German. Thank you, Seamus, for all your work and board staff. I really appreciate it's been a pleasure working with so many bright and capable and hardworking professionals. So it's been a pleasure. Thank you, Dr. Cobb, for being here, and Senator Shamp. I really support what has been said earlier, so I'll be very brief. One of the things I do agree with completely is the age selection that we've selected, I believe, is totally appropriate as for pediatric endorsements, which is 7 and younger. One of the other things I want to talk about, too, is the 1304 permit holders. And for Dr. Seaman's question to answer that, yes, it does raise the level of accountability, which will lead to, we believe, increased safety. So 1304 permit holders, when they're signing those affidavits, they are signing that their facility is safe to provide an anesthesia in their office. So if there is an adverse outcome, where medical personnel couldn't get into some of these offices that have very tight quarters, things of that nature that need to be thought through appropriately when they are completing these affidavits. And some level of training, if we can help ensure that there's trained professionals there in case of an adverse outcome, we welcome that. I would add, and I like the latitude that Dr. Hero talked about, which was and either ACLS, PALS, or an advanced airway course, or an advanced anesthesia course, I would add to that as well. I like how the 1304 permit in every office is I think totally appropriate. And I like how the 1301 permit sounds, so I do support that. I do want to, Senator Schamp still on the call?
Senator, are you on with us?
I just want, we do have on record, we met as a committee members, that we did, regarding the bill, SBO 1602, that we did have a unanimous decision, or at least a unanimous vote, on what would merit a reportable incident, and that would include death or a hospital admission. So I just wanted, if she was here, I just wanted to let her know that, and if we could look at changing. I know that's a different avenue, but I just wanted to make that clear as well. Thank you so much. If there's any other questions, I'm happy to answer.
Thank you, Dr. Christensen. So I'll open it up to more board members for discussion.
Dr. Hero, I think I read in there that we were going to limit anesthesia to 5 hours. Is that, did I read that?
And the committee felt very strongly on this. The language is particular with it. It says a case should not be planned for more than 5 hours, which does give some latitude if you run into a complication. You know, things are just moving a little slower. It's not, 5 hours, anesthesia has to be turned off. But the point is, don't plan a 6 hour, 7 hour, 8 hour case in an office-based setting, which is happening too often at this point. And there's a significant increase in risk in the office when those types of cases are being done. So that committee did feel strongly about that.
And just for my benefit, when people ask me about that, is that fact-based? Is that scientific type things, or was that just an arbitrary choice of time?
So what I would do is probably turn to one of our anesthesiologists to comment on that. But my understanding was that based on studies and standard of care, which is what would the reasonable and prudent like-minded practitioner do under certain circumstances, that cases longer than that in the office are below the standard of care. But if Dr. Arnell, I think Dr. Brady might have signed off. Dr. Arnell, do you want to comment to that?
So I'm actually here, but I do have all those articles.
Go ahead, Dr. Brady. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I've just been muted. So I would just say that there are definitely, there's articles and references to it about increase in risk and what kind of this exponential increase of time of keeping somebody under. I mean, really, I've kind of talked just anecdotally out of the 19,000 general anesthetics I've done. The easiest way to equate this, especially if it depends on like how you're doing general anesthesia too, but your time and your work of breathing diminishes over time. It's like exercising, right? Your lungs are having to like exercise a little bit harder because they're being depressed by general anesthesia. And so the studies and the literature that we reviewed as a committee showed that it's not even a linear relationship. It has actually an exponentially increase during a duration of time. And so as our committee like researched and looked into this, and there has been some reports and adverse events for things that are going 8 to 12 hours in an office, we said, our tent needs to be at 5 hours. Anything over that should really be looking at phase treatment plan. Because there is this threshold where you have diminishable returns and you've crossed over, well, do you do one general anesthetic or do you do, phases of maybe next time you come in for a moderate sedation or deep sedation or something to that nature. So, I mean, I stand by the committee on that. And if anyone wants those articles, I'm definitely can forward those on.
Dr. Blazek, I know, a lot of times it's complicated oral surgeries that are longer procedures. Would you care to comment on this as well? Dr. Margo, had you got your hand up?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to tag on Dr. Seaman's comment there about the research and Dr. Brady had mentioned 8 hours was what the research showing, and we were saying 5, then it's pretty arbitrary to say, well, it's planned for 5 hours. You can put a 5-hour block on a thing, but still keep them under 8 hours and say it just took longer, you know. And then the next question I have, I'll let you answer both, then I'll mute it. Well, 24 hours later, hypothetically, we want to put them back under for another five hours. Is that safer to do 24 hours apart with 2 different sedations, you know, or whatever it may be? Again, it's just I worry about putting limitations like this that I don't know if – I know the research is there, but I don't think it says 5 hours. I think it says probably more in the range of 8. So that was my comment.
So, I mean, to address the 5 turns into 8, if someone just says that, they're full of it. I mean, we've all been practicing long enough to know that, you know, if you're prepared and you're experienced and you're well-trained, a procedure isn't going to go from 5 hours to 8 hours, but it might go from 5 hours to 6 hours. So, you know, but again, that's why the language was written in a manner to provide some latitude with that. And I mean, all I can tell you is we had 3 anesthesiologists, 2 oral surgeons, 2 pediatric pediatricians, a lot of other people with a lot of experience in anesthesia. And this, there was really not much debate on this one.
Dr. Hero?
They're not allowed for dental procedure to go beyond 4 hours, but I totally understand too, but yeah.
Dr. Please.
Yeah, I can. I'm sorry. My mic was muted earlier when you requested and I just called in. But to the board, the committee did do an adverse occurrence study, and we found several adverse occurrences occurred. Dr. German and I did it, occurred with these prolonged anesthetics. And so I think that was also a motivating factor, as well as Dr. Brady bringing together, you know, some really important literature. That we just found that when you get beyond that 5-6 hour mark, keeping someone sedated, you don't have a fold in, you don't have the ability to really take care of the patient when they're under general anesthetic like that. That's what a lot of that data comes from. And that's on a hospital data as well as dental anesthesia data. So pretty well supported. But even our adverse occurrence in the state of Arizona that we reviewed showed that the longer anesthetics were many times where adverse occurrences occurred.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Blazek. Any more discussion by board members?
Did we decide that they had to do CE? Was it going to be in addition to their triennial licensing, or did this thing say that it was going to be could be counted both times? Because I'm more in favor of of having anesthesia providers have more CE than.
Yeah, you know, I'll turn to staff for the specifics of that, but I believe currently, I mean, I know currently anesthesia providers have to obtain more CE, and the committee didn't change it. As far as the specifics, you know, Ryan or staff could probably answer that, but it's definitely to a greater extent than the regular triennial requirements.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So, Jessica, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
We can. Again, thank you for being here.
Sure.
Regarding some of these changes, do you have a recommendation, being our rule writer, how to make these modifications prior to the next meeting? And I guess where I'm going with that is, do you want me to meet with you outside of this meeting and talk through it, and then we can present it to the board, or would you prefer to go through it during open session?
I'm happy to do whatever works best for the board. If that means going through it in open session, then great. We can work on that. Based on my experience working with this board, it might be quicker if you and I met outside of an open session and made the changes and then presented them to the board. But I'm happy to do whatever works for you guys.
Thank you, Jessica. Any board comments on that? I mean, I'm happy to do that with Jessica. in between now and October, obviously everybody's going to get ample opportunity to review the changes prior to us taking a vote on it. But if the board's more comfortable doing it in real time, we can stay here till 10 o'clock at night hashing this out.
I have a question, Dr. Hero. Would you lean more towards one of the letters that was submitted to us so that we could say, yes, that's what we like?
Yeah, I mean, so
that makes sense, what I'm asking?
Absolutely. I think a combination between Dr. Blazek and Dr. Arnall probably fully capture what I think most people were on board with. And then Dr. Brady had some good points as well that we want to try to work in. Dr. Caputo's, I think his, some of the editorial issues, I think, you know, we need to verify that certainly to make sure that it captured the intent. I think with regards to the pediatric endorsement, the former committee members were comfortable with the way it's currently written. I know Dr. Caputo disagreed with that, but I don't know that we need to revisit that at this point. So I would probably pull from those two primarily. The other, I mean, an option, but Ryan, you or Seamus might need input. I don't want to speak for the former committee members. They've always been gracious with their time and willing to help out after hours. I don't know if we can lean on them now or not, though, since 1602 required us to wrap the committee up. So Ryan or Seamus or both, comment on if any one of our former committee members could meet with Jessica to help make these modifications so the board can hopefully adopt this in October.
Yeah, Dr. Hero, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. I hear what you're saying, and I'm trying to cut through, make it the easiest way, make it easiest as possible. I would recommend, it looks like you've identified maybe three or four different areas. And, you know, what, if you could, maybe just get a vote from the board to direct staff and yourself to, work with Jessica to implement, but then choose the ones that you want to put in to, that you want to have her edit. So give her some direction. You know, you don't have to lay the whole thing out, but the certain sections that, you know, the whole board today agrees with, and then she can bring that to the board in October.
So do you, and you want us to reference just sections in the rules or specific documents that were submitted by the former committee members?
You can do, you could do both.
Okay.
You know, it's easier for her to reference those documents.
Well, I just don't want to pigeonhole her to one or two documents because I think, like, I forgot about Ali's document when I was naming everybody else's. I think there's aspects in all of them that she's probably going to want to pull from or verify from. So what I would see is, you know, looking at particularly sections in 1301 and 1304, plus making sure that whatever changes are made there are congruent with the rest of the rules. So oftentimes you make one rule change in one section, there can be bleed over into the other sections. So I wouldn't want to eliminate her ability to make those changes if need be. But the emphasis is going to be on 1301 and 1304. And really utilizing all the documents that were submitted by the former committee members to accomplish that based upon the discussion that we're having here today.
Okay. And so I would just ask that you would make a motion, you know, identify you basically did, but just put that in a motion, direct staff, and Ryan and myself to work with Jessica to, you know, effectuate, the requests and the letters, but you're really also going to need to kind of, denote what you don't want to. You know, I know there were some things that were stated today that maybe, you know, you don't want to see. So the board just needs to make sure that she has some direction.
Well, you know, I guess before we jump to that, what I would ask the board is, so I think you heard very specifically from myself, Dr. Bienstock, and Dr. Christensen, and I think the three of us were in agreement. Is there anything that we talked about that any board members disagreed with? Because if I get a sense that we're pretty much all on the same page, I think I can help Jessica kind of draw the roadmap to get to where we want to get to, and then we can vote on it after next meeting.
Yeah, Anthony, I'm speaking for myself here, I guess, that whenever there's a sedation issue, I always defer to you and Dr. Christensen and your opinions. So I'm good to follow your lead on this one personally, because you're the expert in this. Of course, Dr. Bienstock, because she sedates a lot of the children for the pediatrics. So I'm inclined to follow your guidance and your lead on this.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Seaman, are you comfortable pretty much with everything right now?
I am very comfortable with it, Dr. Hero, and support what the discussions that have happened. I appreciate those experts that have been on the committee and helped get us to this point, and they've helped a lot. And I appreciate their input here at the 24th hour, too, when we're trying to put this all together. And I can see where there were some things that didn't get changed because of that 24th hour, but I think we're good. I'm good with making those changes and then coming back around again.
Appreciate it.
And board members, just to remember too, and for, you know, the people who are in attendance, that, you know, what comes back in October, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to be the end all be all and that's what gets submitted. There's still going to be opportunity for comment and still opportunity to look at that and make sure that you've got it right.
So. Yeah. And I think that's real important for the public to understand as well. And I think I've belabored that at this point, but there's a lot more opportunity to make it changes.
With that said, maybe with that October meeting, we should designate a certain block of time to look at that with public hearing, because that could be extra time, I think.
Yeah, I think that's smart.
Not
Ms. Penna, any comments?
Thank you, Dr. Hero. Really, I appreciate all the work that's been done on this. I would like to thank Senator Schamp and really all of our legislators. They work so hard to protect the public and look out for the welfare of our state. I want to thank Dr. Caputo, Dr. Arnall, I mean, so many other dental anesthesia experts who have closely examined this. Countless of hours have gone into this, and I'm grateful for this close examination. Terrific changes, safe changes are coming from it. At the end of the day, everyone's goal is to protect the public, and I just wanted to thank everyone involved.
Thanks, Ms. Penna. Mr. Diner, you're unusually quiet for something as exciting as rule changes. You're normally chomping at the bit with these.
No, I was following the lead of all of the board members who have spent a lot of time, more time than I have on the anesthesia rules. And I want to echo everything that has been said about, you know, the countless hours that were put in by the committee members, by the board members and the staff in formulating these rules. To the extent there are some sort of cleanup items in the margins, I agree with you, Dr. Hero. If, you know, it seems like something that can be, fixed fairly easily in the coming weeks, prepare it and get it ready for the October meeting. So I'm in agreement with everything that has been said. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Berg, you're, I think, our last board member. I hope I'm not missing anybody, but any comments or questions? Okay, then I'm going to make a motion that we direct staff and myself to work with Jessica. Oh, Mr. Goodman, I forgot about you. I'm so sorry. Did you have a comment? Then I'll continue my motion.
Nick, this is Ryan Borgsad. If you're muted, you have to hit *6 to unmute if we muted you. There you go.
I got muted sometime during the call. I was just complimenting Dr. Hero on
what a wonderful upgrade it was when he became the chair of the anesthesia committee. So definitely I'm in support with what everybody said here, that this is going to help us have better accountability for patient safety in Arizona, and look forward to us finalizing some changes and hopefully getting the approval of GERC.
Thank you, Mr. Goodman. And Mr. Goodman, just because he was the initial chair of the committee and stepped down and I took over. So I'll make a motion that we direct staff to work with Jessica Thomas, our rule writer, and I'll volunteer to help her with the process to make the modifications that were discussed here today and that were submitted to the board and in our packets by former committee members to be ready to present to the full board at our October meeting.
Beanstalk seconds.
Seamus, anything I got to add to that?
Nope. If there's nothing that you want to not consider as part of those that you've already received, then no, you don't have to say anything.
Okay. Any more discussion? Roll call, please. Siri.
Hero?
Yes.
Beanstalk?
Yes.
Berg?
Yes.
Christensen?
Yes.
Dinar?
Yes.
Goodman? Mr. Goodman?
Got muted again. Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
Yes.
Pinna?
Yes.
And Seaman?
Yes.
Motion passes, none opposed. Moving on. You know, I'm going to just jump to our discussion regarding future meetings. So I found out I have a conflict on November for a November board meeting, and it's unfortunately it's unavoidable for me. I've never missed a board meeting, so it's kind of with regret that I won't be there. Ryan, maybe you or staff could work with maybe send a doodle out to see what the board wants to do. If you guys want to keep that date and see if Dr. Beanstalk's available to run it, great. If you guys want to try to move it to a different day, I will adjust my schedule by any means necessary to make another day work. And I apologize. It was just some personal things that came up that I don't have the ability to change, or I would. It's not something I think that we have to hash out right now, but I just wanted to bring it up at this meeting.
This is Christensen. I'd recommend changing the date. You've been here all the way through, Dr. Hero. It'd probably be short-sighted to have you not present. So.
Well, thanks, Dr. Christensen. I will be here for the October meeting when we discuss the anesthesia rules. This would be the November meeting. But we can hash that out later. I wanted to bring it up.
And again, for the record, sorry to interrupt you, Dr. Hero, but for the record, I'd be happy to chair it if we can't decide on a different date. Either way.
Thank you, Doctor. And I didn't even talk about it.
I believe the 13th is a virtual board meeting, too. So if we change the date, can we make it in person?
I think we were able to get a room
good.
Up tomorrow. It was changed to in person.
Got it.
And it's the 17th of November. Isn't that correct?
We're talking October.
The November meeting is the meeting that Dr. Garrow won't be present. October 13th is both in person and virtual. Right. If we move to the 17th, and we can talk about this later, but we may have to look at trying to coordinate with ASDA to maybe possibly use their room. There is no availability on any day. Generally, you guys meet at writers if you wanted to meet on another day. That would work with we'll send something out to try to get that. It looks like Dr. Beanstalk's willing to chair the November meeting.
So Anthony, you can't make the November one?
I can't.
I can't either.
Okay. So what that's worth, staff, Ryan, members, Ryan, how do you want to handle this? I mean, how do you want to get a consensus on what to do with this meeting?
So I think what we'll do is Yasmin will probably just send out a Google Meet, which not a Google Meet, excuse me, a Google form which is basically the survey like a doodle. She'll put on there October 13th with Dr. Beanstalk chair, and she probably will leave the Dr. Beanstalk part off, but keep it as is, knowing that she can chair that meeting. And then we'll try to get make certain that we have a form for that date or any other date. That we'll probably get dates from you that you're available for our member meeting, and then we can put those in the form. We don't want to do too many because we could get 11 different options.
And, you know, if we work with Dr. Cobb, you know, she in the past has graciously offered the AZDA room, and that it, frankly, it'd be nice to support them as well and host those meetings there occasionally. Sorry, Dr. Beanstalk, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say on the Google Meet, if we can specify if we change the date or if we keep the same date, if it's in person or if it's virtual, because I think some of us or most of us prefer to be in person because we're a lot more effective that way, I feel. So if you could specify that, then that would also help with the voting.
And so, great point. The other thing I'll tell you, the virtual meetings are a bear to chair. And Dr. Beanstalk is more than capable, but it's going to be an undertaking if this is an all virtual board meeting in November that you're chairing without Dr. Morrow. I'm expendable, but you're going to need Dr. Morrow. So, Brian, I'm going to just defer to you and, you know, as far as trying to coordinate that out. Okay, big thank you again to everybody. You got board members, I'll tell you, the committee members, this was really an undertaking. And I'm not speaking about myself. I'm talking about really the non-board committee members put in a lot of time. Granted, they were very well compensated for it. I mean, the board pays well. It's a joke. They didn't receive anything. but we owe them, you know, a lot of thanks for this. So, you know, again, just to belabor that as well. So we'll adjourn the meeting. Yep, go ahead.
Dr. Hero, this is Senator Shamp, and I just want to reiterate what you just said. I'm very grateful to the committee members, the board members, for everyone looking at what's best for the patients of Arizona and coming together and putting such good rules forward so that we can ensure the safety as well as good access to care. So thank you all very much, and thank you very much, Dr. Hero, for including me this evening.
Thank you, and thank you for your interest, Senator. We appreciate it. Okay, then with that said, meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Good job. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.